You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. It's you. Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. This is Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM, and today's intro was by Classic Roots from the song It's You featuring Natasha Fisher. Unceded Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Lisa Gerboff. I'm from the Tsimshian Nation and the community of Lhkwalams, and I grew up on the northwest coast in Prince Rupert in my home territory, and I acknowledge that I am an uninvited guest on the Musqueam territory while I'm studying at the UBC campus. And this show, Unceded Airwaves, is also taking place on the unceded lands of the Musqueam people. The Indigenous Collective is here with me today. We have a very busy show today, so maybe we'll start off with a round of introductions. Matt, did you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Matt Andrietta. I'm from both the Qualicum and Musqueam First Nations, actually, and with Italian ancestry on my father's side as well. And yeah, excited for today's show.
Yeah, and we're also joined by Mario, who is board hopping for us today.
Yeah, hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Awesome. So my name is Mario. I am Nisgut from my mother. I grew up in Prince Rupert as well as New Hazleton, both Somaliac-speaking nations as well. Like I said, I'm Nisgut. We speak Somaliac back there as well. I'm in my third year here at UBC, majoring in First Nations and Indigenous Studies. Victor, did you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Hello, I am Victor Sauca. I am an indigenous guy from Ecuador. I am from the Quechua Nation, and my people's name is Saraguro. I am a student at UBC in the unceded and ancestral territory of the Musqueam Nation. Currently, I am doing a major in First Nations and Indigenous Studies, and a minor in gender, race, sexuality, and social justice.
Awesome. Thanks for the intros, guys. I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning into Season 2, Episode 7. Today's show will be covering some tough topics, including the U.S. presidential election results. And so if that's triggering for you, please make sure that you change the dial now. You can always tune back in at 2 o'clock when music for The Observant comes on with Emily. We're also going to acknowledge the No Dakota Access Pipeline protests, but we're going to try and balance this out with some self-care tips after our student panel on the U.S. election. But just a reminder, if this is triggering for you, please feel free to change the dial and tune back in at 2 o'clock.
This show is put together every week by UBC's Indigenous Radio Collective. We are a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use this weekly airtime to discuss issues, current events, and entertainment. We use this weekly airtime as an opportunity for our own self-representation.
Yeah, and self-representation in media is something that Indigenous people do not often have access to. This gives us the opportunity to define who we are as Indigenous people instead of relying on inaccurate representations in broadcast media. It can be difficult to find relatable Indigenous role models and people in media in general, so this is our opportunity to highlight some influential people.
If you'd like to get involved, you can actually send us a message on social media. We have an Indigenous Collective meeting tomorrow from 4 to 5 p.m. at CITR in the Nest on UBC campus. And there will be some snacks.
Of course, every week.
If this show is something that you want to identify with, then we'd encourage you to come out. Everyone's welcome, and there is no experience necessary. If you want to get involved, but you're hesitant about being on air, there are plenty of other ways you can participate in this collective.
Our goal is to show, in this show, is to center the voices of Indigenous people and to create narratives that empower our stories. You can follow and see the airwaves on Facebook and Twitter.
Yeah, if you have an Indigenous artist that we should know about, send us a tweet using the hashtag unceded music or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get it on air. And if we play a song you send us, we'll give you a shout out. So shout out to that. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners, what Indigenous artists you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post links and to the podcast of this episode after the show.
We have the weekly Unceded events listing to share with you later in the show. We are going to start off with some music. We've been talking on Frank Wall on social media, and we are past due to play a tune on the show. This music video is up on you Twitter page, in your Twitter page under the hashtag Unceded Music.
Yeah, so Frank Wall is a Lakota rapper, and the reason that I thought this would be a good song to play for this this segment of the show is because, of course, our continued thoughts are with the water protectors in North Dakota who have had a very, very rough night on Sunday, and I still can't believe the atrocities that are happening down there. The police were in full riot gear. They attacked protectors with tear gas, concussion grenades, sprayed with water cannons at sub-zero temperatures. And it was getting as low as 23 degrees Fahrenheit, which I honestly did not know what that meant. But I looked it up and it actually means minus 3 Celsius. But I mean, when you're getting sprayed with water at that temperature, it is an actual risk. Yeah, there's a risk of hypothermia. And a 21-year-old girl had her arm severely injured in the protest as well and has been undergoing surgery to repair it. So we wanted to play a song just to acknowledge what's happening south of the colonial border from us. This is Oil for Blood by Frank Wall.
In this Lakota Sioux, all red, everything, red nation rising, revising our story, they're televising. Child of the plains, I see 2020. Poverty porn, TV pimpers for money. Tell Diane Sawyer, I am a warrior. Give me your camera, send pal to your lawyer. Free all my people, get them out of prison. Take them to Sundance, show them how we're living. Give youth an outlet, disadvantaged prodigies. Feed these Republicans all our commodities. Put them on the res from the day they're born. They won't survive cause their cancer is airborne. Put them in our schools, put them in our shoes. Take away their money and give them our booze. Red, make everything red. Words of my ancestors up in my head. Food for thought, our kids underfed. Your oil is mud, they want the earth dead. Oil for blood, oil for blood. Making you rich, you soil my love. Oil for blood, oil for blood. My mother is clean, that oil is mud. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Everything's red, everything's red. Red, 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 dead. Red, dead, red. I can't afford to leave the res. Government has got me trapped. The leadership need a tip, and most of my tribal leaders whack. They don't wanna hear that, they just wanna chill. I'm sick, I'll go to IHS and get a pill. For real? Like a song without a title. Feel forgotten, like slaves picking the cotton. Forever tribal, with no connection to the Bible. Flying, people rotting, sometimes I'm suicidal. Feeling like no exit, generation X shit. Text messaging and sex, what I connect with. Technology, get this world to acknowledge me. My ancestors studied numbers and astrology. Lakota philosophy, keep them haters off of me. Keystone XL, you smell like an atrocity. To my home and my ancestors, I am loyal. Build that pipeline and I'm burning down your oil. Oil for blood, oil for blood. Making you rich, you soil my love. Oil for blood, oil for blood. My mother is clean, that oil is mud. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. Keystone, everything's red. Pipeline, now everything's dead. everything's red. Everything's red. 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 Dead. Red. Dead. Red.
Right, you heard Frank Wallen with Oil for Blood on CITR 101.9 FM. This is Unceded Airwaves, and we are broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and up next we have a student panel on the U.S. presidential election. And it's been about 2 weeks. We've taken our time covering this topic because it is a very broad topic, but we're going to try and cover it from an Indigenous lens. But before we get into it, I wanted to do a bit of a background on kind of how the U.S. electoral system works, just so that we're all on the same page. So basically, media outlets and observers worldwide have been consumed by the U.S. presidential election. It's hard at this point to imagine anyone who might not have heard about it. I mean, it has just been so it's just been so prevalent in the media recently. The election happened on November 8th of this year, and now we're seeing the aftermath of the election results. We've seen it for the past 2 weeks with Donald Trump winning the federal election. So in U.S. state politics, as in settler state politics, not Indigenous law, this can be confusing. So here's a quick rundown of how it's structured. So the United States of America is made up of a federation of states. The U.S. federal government has three branches, with each role outlined in the Constitution. So there's the executive branch, which is the where the president of the United States, they are actually in the executive branch of the government. There's the judicial branch, which is the U.S. Supreme Court. And then there's Congress, who essentially writes the laws. When the U.S. picked its president, it is choosing a head of state and a commander-in-chief for the largest military on the planet. So we saw the presidential election, which is basically a two-party system, where the candidates were Hillary Clinton for the Democrats and Donald Trump for the Republicans. The candidates rely on votes to win, but they don't rely on the popular vote. They actually are campaigning for the Electoral College votes. So each state has a different number of Electoral College votes based on their population size. California has 55, New York has 29, Ohio has 18, and except for Nebraska and Maine, those two are exceptions. But besides those two, the winner takes it all. So if a candidate wins a state by one vote, they take the entire state and all of that state's Electoral College votes. So in California, they would win all 55 Electoral College votes. The candidate needs 270 out of 538 Electoral College votes to win the White House. And this is how Clinton won the popular vote, but Trump won the Electoral College votes. So with that in mind, we're now going to have a student panel on the U.S. presidential election. We have a mix of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students here today. So maybe we'll start off by doing some introductions. I'm joined by Clara Salter. Thank you for coming in today, Clara.
Thanks for having me. My name is Clara, and I am a settler here on unceded Musqueam territory, and I'm from Scottish descent from the MacLeod and MacKay clans, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to discuss this important event with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We're also joined by Alexandra Wickler. Thanks for joining the panel today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm from Philadelphia, and I'm out here at UBC doing a double major in political science and First Nations studies, and I'm loving it.
Awesome, and thanks for making the time for us today. We're also joined by Indigenous Collective member Matt Andrietta, who you heard in the intro. Thanks for being here with us today, Matt.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
And this was actually your idea for a segment.
Something
that we needed to acknowledge, at least, on the show.
Yeah, like, we had a show the day after the election, so it was, like, really fresh, and there were some, like, emotional classes going on and things like that, too, so I felt like it was something we had to speak to, especially as an Indigenous collective as well.
Absolutely. Well, getting into the panel, these were two very unpopular candidates. Donald Trump, in particular, has campaigned on racist, fear-mongering, anti-immigrant, and misogynistic policy platforms. What were your initial reactions to the election results?
I was devastated. I felt like I was going through a breakup where you go to sleep and then you wake up the next morning, you feel fine, and then you remember what happened and what's the reality of your day and the next day and the day after that. So at first I felt like, oh, this isn't real. Hillary Clinton's going to be president. And then when it really starts to set in, you're crying, your family's crying, your professors are crying. It was horrifying.
I think that that feeling of disbelief is very, very real. Like, as I was watching the election results come in, I was, you know, basically the media that I was watching was basically predicting that Hillary had already won early in the night. Mm-hmm. And that kind of instilled, maybe to the detriment of American voters, that instilled the sense of, oh, Hillary's going to win. So I was kind of like in that same frame of mind. I was like, oh, Hillary's going to win. Hillary's going to win. There's no way Donald Trump's going to win.
I think what was so astounding was it really highlighted, well, and it reflected what's actually going on in the U.S. because why those polls were so inaccurate is you had a huge group of voters who otherwise never mobilized to the polls. And that just shows the extent of Trump's rhetoric, because it's getting these racist, xenophobic voters mobilized from, you know, the middle of nowhere in these farm rural areas to come out to the polls and vote. So that's what was pretty disturbing on that level.
What was your initial reaction, Clara?
Yeah, I definitely went through some of those same processes of initial numbness at first, of disbelief and not knowing how to react or what to think, and then heaviness and sadness and anger and frustration. I think that speaks to our perspective as people who care about issues of racial justice. It's so difficult to understand how this could happen, and that's why we probably had a lot of confirmation bias in looking at polls, just not imagining a world where it's possible that Donald Trump could win.
Yeah, and I had similar reactions too, mostly anger, fear, like really similar things like that kept on coming up for me, and then even coming to class too and seeing how other people are being affected added to that a lot more too. And yeah, that's why I wanted to discuss it too.
Just kind of amplified that feeling.
Yeah, for sure. And like validated them in a lot of ways, which was really important actually as well.
Yeah, I think after like maybe discussing it in classes, I went from just disbelief. And through my own processes, I went from disbelief to angry. And then once seeing other people's reactions, I was actually quite upset. It went from being just like, you know, angry, being the angry Indian, to like being actually, you know, feeling for other people and how they're affected by this. So what are a few examples of how Trump has actually targeted minority groups? Does anyone have any that they wanted to mention? Is it even worth getting any more airtime?
I mean, we could go on forever about that. For one, he refers to Elizabeth Warren as Pocahontas. So I think there's some very clear issues with using
overt racism
and just absolute disregard for human beings.
Yeah, for sure. And if we want to center it more like around indigeneity and things like that for the purposes of this show, I mean, there's countless examples where he kind of comes into competition with indigenous casinos and like them beating out his own casinos, and then claiming that certain tribes, like, quote unquote, don't look like Indians, end quote, and things like that, and just questioning indigeneity from his very privileged standing point, like, really problematic.
Yeah, and I think for me, as his presidential nomination continues to unfold and we're getting more of an idea of what his presidency is going to look like, for me, what's the most disturbing is his silence on a lot of these instances of violent racism gripping the nation. He stays mum even on Twitter, which is his most accessible favorite platform, and he's not addressing, you know, the mail bombs that are being sent in Philadelphia to Jewish civilians by white supremacists who voted for Trump. He's not addressing Trump supporters in the South harassing and intimidating black drivers on the freeway. He's not saying any of that. So to me, the silence is the most concerning.
Absolutely. And I think this has on-the-ground repercussions for people living in the States, like as you just mentioned, some of those examples. But I feel like to bring it to more of a local perspective, these sentiments can actually transcend quote-unquote state boundaries and actually affects what happens here. Like we're all affected by it. We're in the Musqueam territory. We're not south of the colonial border. But what do you think the effect will be here where we are?
I think that's a really important question to ask, because there's been a lot of people saying, oh, Canada's safe, Canada's fine, let's all move to Canada. And the one and only great Van Jones said, people keep saying that this hate wave that's moving across the West cannot hit Canada, and you are wrong. And it's really important to recognize that we're not immune to this. There's white supremacy in Canada. There is alt-right ideology in Vancouver. One of the Conservative Party candidates, Kelly Leach, has said that we need more of Trump-like political movements in Canada. There were
all that's totally cringeworthy. Like it I just is. Physically yeah, cringed. You can't see it on the radio, but I felt like I had to acknowledge that.
Definitely, there's been alt-right posters circulated in Richmond, being very racist towards people of Asian descent. Neo-Nazi graffiti in Ottawa. It may not be as overt to some people, but it's very much present, and we need to we can't act like we're immune to that in Canada.
Absolutely.
I also think it's a little bit troubling, because when there's such a big spotlight on the U.S. right now for this shock that the racism exists and is ongoing, it takes away from the fact that, you know, Canada is confronting a lot of racism that's happening within our own borders here. You know, you recently had I think the man was 18 years old who was held in solitary confinement for 4 years in the Thunder Bay area. So there's major issues of racism that we need to be focusing on.
Absolutely.
Well.
You know, both systemic and institutional racism, but also kind of what we experience here in our own lives. Many people are fearing for their safety in the States, and that's for good reason. Do you have any thoughts on how Indigenous people may be affected by this, or maybe will they be affected by this? Does this election change anything for Indigenous people?
I mean, in terms of Standing Rock on its own, like that's
horrifying
to think of.
Yeah.
Horrifying, because I mean, if we thought it was bad under Democrats and things like that, imagine a self-proclaimed businessman who sees disposable Indigenous bodies in the way of oil revenue. That's horrifying to think of. And the violence that's already been enacted at Standing Rock, like, we're terrified already just talking about it now, but when he comes into office, I don't even know what's going to happen, and it's scary to think of, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's even possible to imagine it getting any better, just thinking of how extreme it is right now.
Yeah, and I also think just in general, his lack of concern for the environment is going to critically affect Indigenous communities. You know, the land is essential for the revitalization and sustainability of Indigenous culture and livelihood. So he said yesterday in a private YouTube released press conference of what he's going to accomplish in his first 100 days, that he was going to reinstate coal mining industries. I mean, that is a huge step backwards. That threatens Indigenous livelihood on so many levels. So I think his war with the environment will affect Indigenous people severely.
Right, and he's also said that he will institute a climate denier as the head of the EPA, which is hugely problematic, and that he will go ahead with Keystone, which was vetoed under the previous administration, and many Indigenous people are opposed to that. So I think the environmental concerns that affect Indigenous people very deeply are a huge concern for me with the Trump administration. Another concern of mine from my position as a woman is the rhetoric around rape culture in this election and the sexual entitlement embodied by Trump, as we heard with the Trump tapes and throughout his campaign and everything that he's tweeted and said about women. And we know that this rhetoric and rape culture and sexual violence disproportionately affects women of color and indigenous women. And I think that that means we have to dig into those conversations about missing and murdered indigenous women and girls and really think about the links between representation and violence and how those are situated in a wider conversation of rape culture, of sexual violence, of consent and sexual entitlement. And that's a huge concern that I have for all women, for all people of color, for everyone who's more prone to sexual violence.
Yeah, and we were also discussing just how this concept of the Olympics of the oppressed is going to be reemerging when all minority groups are targeted. You have Black groups feeling targeted, Muslim, Islam, Jewish people, and it's a very segregating feeling when every group is feeling like, you know, in fear, how am I going to survive a presidential era with Trump? So I think that takes away from really critical issues. We even saw here with the Trump protests that happened Thursday evening after he won the election on the discussion Facebook group for the protests that happened downtown. People were writing, well, why are we protesting Trump? What about the issue of homeless people in Vancouver? What about the issue of you know, women's rights or Black Lives Matter? It's like there's a time, there has to be a time and space for all of these issues, but it can't detract from issues that we have to keep fighting for.
Absolutely. Does anyone have any last thoughts that maybe you wanted to bring up just before we go to break?
I think going back to your initial question of what my initial reaction was to this election, it was this heaviness and this this just sense of despair. But I also noticed around me this palpable digging in and determination to be fierce and not give up and continue hoping for racial justice and continued advancements of Indigenous rights and rights for women. And I think that's something that we need to latch on to at a time like this.
I think the most important thing right now is that people show up. If you're upset about what you see in the news, about political policies that are being pushed forward, about the way people are, you know, treating minority groups, you have to show up. You have to show up to letter writing campaigns. You have to show up when people are organizing phone calls to governmental people in governmental positions. That's the biggest thing. You have to fill these spaces with your voice and with your presence and be a voice for people that don't have one right now.
And just to echo what you just said, I'd like to thank you all for showing up today and bring this issue to our listeners at Unceded Airways. I think it's really important that we talk about these issues. I know it can be a bit heavy, but as many people have been saying throughout this whole election process, it just makes our work that much more important and that much more needed, especially in media where these issues from this perspective may not get as much airtime or attention or anything like that. So that's what we're really trying to do here and trying to keep Indigenous voices centered. And I just really appreciate you all coming in here today to talk about the U.S. election in our second student panel of the year.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Matt. You're here almost every week, so I'm really glad that you also keep coming in and bringing up these issues.
I have nowhere else to go.
It's right after lunch, so you gotta sit somewhere for a bit. All right, so this story is ongoing. It's not over yet, and there's still a lot to talk about with how these election results are affecting Indigenous peoples, and we'll be sure to bring up this topic on future episodes. But for now, we're going to keep going with the song. I wanted to leave this topic with more of a thought of hope. So this song is hopefully going to do that. This is Red Eagle's Song of Survival.
Have to learn to maneuver through a linear society without completely losing ourselves in that greed, in Maya language, naholo, a lover of things.
Motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
All Access Pass is back for season 2. We are a collectively run weekly program that discusses equity, inclusion, and accessibility issues on and off UBC's campus, including both visible and invisible disabilities. Anyone can get involved. No experience is necessary. People of all abilities are welcome to join. Check us out on Facebook at All Access Pass or get involved by emailing accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
superstars.
Hey folks, the Pride Collective at UBC is an AMS resource group for LGBTQ plus folks. All our events and resources are free, so you should check us out on Facebook or come to Nest 2103 and say hi. We have so many fun events every week.
All right, so you just heard a song of survival. That song came to us, I don't know if it came to us through the Unseated Music hashtag, but it's a song that I really like. That was by Red Eagle. My name is Lisa Gerbov. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is the show Unseated Airwaves. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. So we had a bit of a heavy topic talking about the U.S. presidential election, and we didn't really want to leave our listeners feeling that feeling of despair that you can get when you're talking about such heavy topics, especially in the reality that many of us face today. So to kind of bring us back to a space where it's more constructive, Clara actually wanted to maybe touch on a few self-care tips and resources that students can take away.
Yeah, self-care is something that's really important. I know for me, this entire election process was challenging for my mental health, and it can be really difficult in having these conversations, and especially if you're like me, you put a lot of pressure on yourself to continue to have these conversations even when it's not necessarily good for you. So I wanted to share this quote from poet and civil rights activist Audre Lorde. She says that caring for myself is not self-indulgence, it is self-preservation, and that is an act of political warfare. So with that in mind, here are a few self-care tips, and this is taken from an article by Kim Tran in On Everyday Feminism called Five Self-Care Tips.
And we actually shared that on our Unseated Airwaves Facebook page, and I'll share it on our Twitter page after the show as well for you to find.
Right. So this is directed at people who already understand what oppression is like on a personal level. So number one, social media is a special hell full of trolls, and you are welcome to disengage at any time.
I find a lot of people on Twitter as well, like they'll say right in their bio, like I don't respond to trolls. Just straight up.
Right, yeah.
I think that's awesome.
I also had a friend share recently a Beyonce woman called Beyonce video, I'm a grown woman, and say that this is a perfectly acceptable response to internet trolls, and I loved that.
Oh my God, send it to everyone.
I will. I'll tweet it out. And number two, treat yourself like you would your bestie going through a breakup. It can be really easy to be hard on yourself and put a lot of pressure on yourself, so just remember to have self-compassion.
Absolutely.
And number three, news media is why you cry. So consider getting rid of that news app. This is challenging because I love following the news and feel like it's really important, but it does, it can be harmful at times. So just knowing your boundaries with that is important.
And on Sunday night with the Standing Rock face-off that was happening between authorities and protectors, I found myself up late on Sunday night on Twitter reading what was happening, following it. People were doing live Facebook streams of it. And I ended up staying up like really late watching all this stuff. And then the next day I just felt terrible. Like I came to class, I was grumpy. Like I admitted it right away. I was like, I'm sorry, I'm grumpy today. And it was literally because I had stayed up so late and I was watching all of these reports come in, and I was watching all these atrocious things happen in real time that, you know, if maybe I would have put my phone down earlier at say like 10:30, 11 o'clock instead of, you know, 1 in the morning, maybe I could have recovered from that a little bit differently.
Yeah, that's right. Just I've definitely been in that situation, and you have to listen to yourself, listen to what your boundaries are and what that voice is saying. Do you need this right now? Mm-hmm. Is this constructive? Can you engage with it at a later time?
Exactly.
So number four, stay home from parties that you know you will become consciousness raising groups. I think that's pretty self-explanatory.
So we talked a lot about this around Halloween. So going to parties where, you know, there might be people who are maybe not as aware of cultural appropriation, what it looks like and what the repercussions are for Indigenous people. So, yeah, one of our tips was basically to avoid those spaces. Or, I mean, if you are going to be in that space, bring someone with you who you can, you know, get away with, maybe leave the party, go somewhere else. You don't always have to put yourself in that scenario. The burden should not be on you to educate people about this.
Yeah, feel free to leave any conversation at any time that you need to. And number five is simply give yourself permission to say no.
Absolutely. And I think that this kind of ties into number four. It's not your obligation to argue with people, especially around things like the U.S. presidential election. The burden isn't on Indigenous peoples, people of color. The burden shouldn't be on any one person. It's really about self-preservation. I think this one is you should not have to face that burden of taking on the world as just an individual. So yeah, you do have the right to say no. I totally support that one. We also wanted to talk about a few resources. We have, she isn't a formal Indigenous Collective member, Shokia. She is an honorary Indigenous Collective member. She comes to our show. She's a big supporter. Her and Matt come by the station quite a bit. And she actually recommended the Land Body Defense report called Violence on the Land, Violence on Our Bodies, which includes a self-care kit that has both physical well-being and mental well-being activities to go through that are Indigenous-centered. And we can tweet out a link to that after the show. Nancy Clark works in social work at UBC and also at Thompson Rivers in Kamloops. She was at the Decolonizing Rape Culture event that happened here on campus about a month ago. She has some written guides and handbooks on decolonial self-care, and you can find links to those resources online. We'll also tweet that out and put it on Facebook. And also both the Urban Native Youth Association and the Vancouver Friendship Center have sport and recreation programs that Aboriginal people can utilize. And I find this very helpful because I personally find exercise helps me with my self-care and my well-being as well. So that's something that I find is very important to me. So those are just a few things that you can access as well. After the break, we're going to have some commercials coming up here. We have a new track coming out from DJ Shub, who is a Mohawk DJ from Six Nations. He blends electronic beats with traditional powwow. And he has a new track called Indomitable featuring the Northern Cree singers from his first solo EP called Powwow Step. You can find the video on our Facebook and on our Twitter pages. Mario Parent will be chatting with DJ Shub in a few, so stay with us. I think we're going to start off actually with DJ Shub now. Okay, Mario?
Yeah.
You just heard Indomitable by DJ Shub, and this is Unceded Airwaves at CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Up next, we have an interview by myself, interviewing DJ Shub himself. Here we go. I'm chatting with DJ Shub, who is a Mohawk artist from Six Nations. He blends electronic beats with traditional powwow music, and he's on the line to chat with us about his latest single, Indomitable. And without further ado, DJ Shub, I'll let you further introduce yourself.
Okay, sounds good. My name is Dan General, also known professionally as DJ Shub. I am Mohawk, Turtle Clan from Six Nations, Ontario, the Six Nations Reserve in Oshawa, Ontario. I grew up off reserve in Fort Erie, which is about an hour and a half away. And I am a DJ producer who I've been DJing for 15 years or so and producing for about 20. And yeah, that's the short version of it.
Yeah, that's the short version. I had a chance to check out your website that has the longer version, which is your creation story. I was really taken away with that because I feel like every great hero has a creation story, and you know, DJ Shub, no exception. Could you tell us a little bit more about the mentorship in your life that's mentioned in the story that kind of got you to the place where you're at?
Well, I mean, there's many different things that brought me to this point in my career. Like from the very beginning, I would have to give a big shout out to my older brother, who is basically the one who started me on this musical journey. He was a DJ growing up, and I used to follow him to the record store. We used to buy records. You know, I would sit there and listen to him practice mix and all that stuff, and huge inspiration for me. He actually bought me my first DJ setup and got me started. So as far as hip hop and the love for music, That was the main thing that started me off. But
yeah,
as far as the current state, power step, and all that good stuff, that's a whole other story. It's basically the second chapter of many chapters of my career for sure. That started basically with the crew I was with, Tribe Called Red.
Yeah,
I started producing with them in 2009. Mm. And, it was basically the start of Power Step for me. Anyway, it was, the first time I really got to, understand and create music involving my culture, involving who I am.
Now, I was also looking at your creation story, and it mentioned that you're a family man now. I wanted to ask you, what does it mean to be a husband or a father on the road?
It means a lot less time at home, which was one of the main reasons why I didn't like touring to begin with. And with the group I was with before, we were touring 9 months of the year, you know, so it was tough on me. And for me, being a family man, because it was family is like the most important thing to me, and I've always been around my family and people who know me, you know that, you know, so, I mean, being away from them was the hardest thing I could have done, and so this is the one thing I'm trying not to do too much of is being away from my family. They're my biggest inspiration when it comes to music, and if I can be around them as much as I can, I will be, but at the same time, it's, you know, for me to go away and work is what pays the bills, you know, so it's something you have to do. It's all about sacrifice. When it comes down to it, some things you need to sacrifice in order to move ahead.
Mm-hmm. I hear you. And I was just curious, right now, are you mentoring anybody in your life, musically or just culturally?
Well, my son is 9. He's going to be turning 9 in January. And I've been getting into every sport, you know, he wanted to try. He's going to be a sports guy like me growing up. But it seems like he's following his dad when it comes to wanting to make music. So
awesome.
I think he's going to be my main. I'm going to be his mentor when it comes to making music, and I'm going to teach him everything I know. So he can, you know, once I'm gone, he can continue this power step to wherever it's going to be.
Awesome. You have a new track, actually, the Indomitable, featuring the Northern Cree singers from that were also featured on the first EP, Powell Step. Can you tell me a bit about that track and the collaboration with the Northern Cree singers?
Well, Northern Cree, I mean, like, if you're in any country, they're basically the big players, the big drum group when it comes to power drum. I'm lucky to have the chance to work with them in the record label and basically use anything in their catalog. Not only that, I'm going to be going forward working with them with getting actual acapellas and exclusive stuff that isn't around yet. So I'm super excited for that. But yeah, Northern Cree, I mean, I've been sampling their stuff now since you know, Nation to Nation, and even before that, our first the self-titled, A Tribe Called Red CD. So I've been working with them with their samples, with their songs for such a long time. But now it's now that we have a relationship between now that we have a relationship, it's going to be, the sky's the limit now. It's the tip of the iceberg, I would say, for things that are going to happen with like groups like Northern Cree, groups like Black Lodge, and so on, and even other groups like Morningstar River. They're a group I collaborated with for a song called "Old School is for Lovers," a song that we gave out for free and was on a Vice TV show. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's great working with these they're legends, right? So
exactly, yeah. Can you talk to us a little bit more about your music video for Indomitable?
Yeah, it's basically when it comes down to the story, is about a guy who lives off reserve and is bogged down by just the stresses of work and daily routines. And you see that in the video. And for him, his escape and his re-energizing is going back to his reserve during powwow season. It doesn't necessarily have to be powwow season, but in the video, it's during a powwow. And it's where you get to see your friends and your family who you haven't seen in a while. And that's exactly what powwows usually are, a chance to see your friends and your family and to, you know, represent who you are culturally and to share your culture too with people who necessarily don't know it. And you get energized from things like that. And that was the main thing for the video. And we had a really good team to work with. They're called Mad Ruck, and amazing people to work with. And I just gave them just a really short, you know, synopsis of like that scenario. I said, I want a guy, you know, who's working and da da da. And they took that idea and they ran with it. And it turned out beautiful. It was, it's definitely, is something that feels important when I watch it now. You know, it was something that just an idea, and now to turn out to something like that is just extraordinary. It's great.
Yeah.
And not to mention that a good friend of mine is the main star of the video, Classic Roots. And if you should check him out too, he's an amazing techno house producer from Toronto.
Absolutely. We're always looking for more Indigenous music to feature on the radio. We've launched a media campaign called #unceded music. So we also think the video for Indomitable speaks to Indigenous experiences, you know, moving between Western lifestyle and cultural lifestyle, oftentimes, you know, in the same day. Would you say that was an accurate description of Indomitable?
Yeah. And that's just, it captures one culture. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, like, you got to remember, there's, you know, it's just because it depicts a guy who's a native guy who goes back to his reserve to feel to be around his own people and to be around his own culture. You know, gets him energized. It could be any culture, really, any from any background to do the same thing. And basically, the gist of it is to never forget your culture and to let it help you in times of negativity. And let it be positive, bring something positive in your life, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's culture, really empowering.
Culture is the most important thing, I feel. So, I mean, like, to bring it any way possible back in your life, or, you know, you have to do it, absolutely.
And there's a real evolution, you know, that I see because I've been following your work for a while now, that you know, you're not just sampling or crate digging anymore. You're really collaborating with everybody out there in, as you said, Indian country, and I think I really respect that. So, what are some newer themes that are playing out for you in your current album that you can touch on?
Well, Powwow Step is Powwow Step is basically it's a continuation of what people know my sound for. You know, I mean, like if they're a fan of my last my past projects, you know, it's exactly what's going to be expected. You know, I mean, it's club bangers and just super fun dance music, and it's the thing that that I've built for such a long time now, and it's good to finally get a chance to explore different areas too, and music wise, and not get not limit myself to just certain things. And this EP, the track on the EP is called Smoke Dance One, which is a perfect example of exploring different musics and different genres of music. I mean, like this is Smoke Dance One is really a jungle track, drum and bass track, which is stuff I always wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And it incorporates the smoke dance from my reservation, which is unique to my reserve and the songs that are sung. So that's like one thing on the album that's different from the other tracks, you know. And the end of the tracks too, that I use crow hop. You know, so it's basically stuff that people would expect from me if I were to continue to make music.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Powwow Step is coming out December 2nd. Do you have any big plans for the album release?
Well, there's a big CD release party in Toronto. There's four of the DJs playing, live dancing. We have the guy who actually sampled. And the guy who I sampled and took into the studio and recorded with is going to be there to sing some songs live. So I'm excited for that. And yeah, that's about it. I mean, we have, we're setting up tour dates right now for 2017, which is I plan on taking this EP on the road and making sure everybody hears it.
And will you be mm-hmm. stopping by any reservations along the way or, you know, special off shows?
I hope so. I really do hope so. I mean, right now it's in the hands of my booking agent who's setting everything up, and my manager, and you know, they know that's something I definitely want to do. So we'll see. I mean, sometimes it's hard scheduling wise and whatnot, but we're going to do the best we can to get to those places.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time, DJ Shub. Powwow Step is coming out December 2nd. Thank you for talking to us here at Unseated Airwaves.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
October Discorder.
Put it down now. And give me my
November issue.
That's right. Stop reading the October issue of Discorder now. Pick up November's Discorder for features on Ichuda, Media Democracy Days, Tim the Mute, Safe Amp Society, Want, and Seekers International. Plus, interviews with the organizers of the James Black Gallery, comedian Sophie Bundle, and more. Thanks to this month's advertisers, Vinyl Records, The Rickshaw Theater, Zipcar, Jazz Records, Live Van, The Astoria, Don't Argue, The Rio Theater, Timber Concerts, Unit, Pit, Mint Records, and The Wise Hall. Pick up an issue of Discorder around town or read online at discorder.ca.
Well.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
All right, you heard a segment from Mario Perrin talking to DJ Shub about his music and his most recent music video, Indomitable, which just came out maybe about a week ago. It's a phenomenal video. You can find it on our social media and under the hashtag Unseated Music. But now we have our Unseated events listing to end off our show. Victor?
Well, Rematriate is having a coffee house fundraiser tomorrow from 7 p.m. until 10 p.m. at Western Front on East 8th Avenue. The event is by donation, which doesn't have to be money. All the donations will go to the Downtown Eastside Women's Shelter. The event info is on our Facebook and Twitter pages under the hashtag Unceded Events.
And the First Nations and Indigenous Studies Student Association is having their third annual Winter Feast fundraiser next week at the UBC Longhouse from 5:30 p.m. till 9 p.m. Entry is by donation, and the info is on our social media platforms. I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who contributed to today's show. Our student panel, Clara Salter, Alexandra Wilker, and Matt Andrietta, and our Indigenous Collective members who helped out on our show today, Victor Sauka, who you just heard with the Unceded Events, Mario Parent, thank you for board hopping for us, and my name is Lisa Gerbov. Thanks for being with us at Unceded Airwaves on CITR, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.